stories from faraway foreign lands, that is Ukraine, Russia, even Pakistan, which is closer, they've dominated our pattern or algorithm for Kathak letters so much that I sometimes suspect that either you are getting bored with this, or you might think that I don't have anything to talk about in India, or that there is no clutter with anything that's happening in India. Now, that is not true, particularly not when Parliament is in session. So a lot of things are happening and we will talk about those. But the fact also is that what is dominating the mind space and the headlines these days is still what's happening in the world. Now, what I am trying to do, instead of talking about Indian politics or what's happening within India, I am today talking about what's happening around India in two ways. One, India's neighborhood, that is India and its neighborhood. And second, the flurry of foreign visits to India. Now, what kind of a flurry it is? I got the cue this morning when I picked up my copy of The Hindu, because The Hindu on the front page has this graphic showing these visits by foreign VIPs into India over this week, last week of March, going into early first week of April. And see this list, and I will add some more after that. See the dates. So Fumio Kishida, Japanese Prime Minister, he came on March 19. That was a meeting fixed at the last Quad virtual summit. Now he's come in, why? Because India is a member of Quad. As Joe Biden said, India is a shaky member of Quad on Russia for obvious reasons. Nobody is pushing, no fellow Quad member is pushing India rudely or putting India under any coercion or any moral pressure on this, because they know where India is coming from. So, but at the same time, there is an effort to keep Quad cohesive, keep India reassured, also to reason with India to the extent possible, because you know the Japanese also in this case have a problem with the Russians. That is the Kuril Islands issue, which we had spoken about in one Kathak letter earlier. And Russians meanwhile have suspended talks with the Japanese over the Kuril Islands issue. So that's what brought Kishida to India at this point, because India is an important country to exchange notes with. In the backdrop, there is Russia, the Quad, Indo-Pacific, etc. Because the message from fellow Quad members and the message from Europe, I don't know how seriously Europeans are taken in Delhi, but the message from all of them is that, look, you talk about Indo-Pacific, but what's happening in Europe right now will be the exact prototype for something that will happen in future in Indo-Pacific. And then if you take the wrong side on this, quote unquote, the wrong side, if you're on the wrong side of history, what will happen on the other side? Now, I said nobody takes the Europeans very seriously for the simple reason, not to be rude to Europeans, but for the simple reason that in no security situation crisis ever for India have Europeans spoken for India. Never. In fact, Russians, of course, have spoken for India in the past. They've also used the veto, but that's a history from long past. But once again, even when India faced its biggest external security crisis, a military disaster in 1962, which is the country that came literally to India's aid with all kinds of support, it was America. At that point, Russia was also equidistant between India and China. If at all, slightly more inclined towards China, although their relationship was strained. So there is no trust between India and Europe. So India won't listen to any lectures from Europeans. Maybe they will laugh on the side, right? But Japanese fellow Quad members, and given the long relationship that India and Japan have, the Japanese investments in India, and also the Japanese credits to India, which are on very, very easy terms, Japan and India have a special relationship. That's why Fumio Kishida came here. Then Austrian Foreign Minister. Now, Kishida came on March 19. Austrian Foreign Minister Alexander Schallenberg, he came on March 20, just the next day. In fact, if I just read the list for you, the schedule, you will know that no day has been a holiday in this period. So March 19, Fumio Kishida. March 20, Austrian Foreign Minister Alexander Schallenberg. March 21, Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison had a virtual summit with Prime Minister Modi. So that is his second Quad member with a similar sort of messages, because Australians also have troubles with China. And everybody is reminding India that, look, we are with you because you have troubles with China. At the same time, we understand your compulsions and limitations, but stay the course. Because Russians, the Chinese, they are also trying to bring in pressures in their own ways. The Chinese foreign minister, and why did he come? He came, his main concern, it was not to settle the border issue. His main concern was that a BRICS summit has to take place later this year. And if India doesn't come, then it will be a big setback for BRICS. So if you drop I from BRICS, BRICS doesn't have much of a meaning. And there is an Asian Infrastructure Bank, there is a BRICS bank, there are many projects linked to BRICS. So Prime Minister Modi not going for that summit will be a big setback for that entire idea, as it would be for the Russia-India-China summit. That's why the Chinese were keen, and that's why Wang Yi came. Now Sergei Lavrov is coming, Russian foreign minister, partly with the same message. So Russia and China are working in conjunction, right? They're working in consort. In fact, Sergei Lavrov just made a statement yesterday that Russia-China relations have never been better. Now, in this situation, see again the list. Fumio Kishida, March 19. Alexander Schallenberg, Austrian foreign minister, March 20. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison, virtual summit, March 21. US Undersecretary for Political Affairs, Victoria Nuland, March 22. I told you, no day is a holiday now. Greek foreign minister, even he's come in, Nikos Dendias, March 23. Then on March 24, the Omanese foreign minister, that is Sayed Badr bin Hamad bin Hamoud al-Busaidi, he came in. March 25, I told you Wang Yi came in, right? Wang Yi was very important visit at that point, and unnecessarily some expectations were raised that this might lead to some de-escalation or disengagement at the borders. But that, as I explained to you, was not on his agenda. That was the central visit of this week in a way. Following that, March 28, EU Special Envoy for Indo-Pacific, Gabriel Vicentin. And what message did he come with? EU for the first time has an ambassador for Indo-Pacific. So message again was the same, that look, if you are not on the right side, when you see a much larger European country trampling upon a much smaller European country, you are maybe inviting or encouraging similar kind of misadventures in the Indo-Pacific region. So stick by the principles that you want the world to follow in Indo-Pacific, support the same principle in Europe. That was the message. Somebody listens or not, I don't know. Unlikely anybody would listen right now, because as we said in National Interest last week, every country runs its foreign policy only its own national interest. Everything else, morality, what is right, what is wrong, principles, all of that comes later. Foreign policy is the most cynical business. In the middle of this melee also came the Mexican foreign minister, Marcelo Ebrard. He came in on March 30, right? That is the day as I record this episode of Cut the Clutter. Now, what brings him into India? What brings him into India is Mexico has a lot of trade relations with Russia also. Everybody is facing the threat of sanctions. And now after primary sanctions, we'll see secondary sanctions. Secondary sanctions, as my colleague Nanima Basu, who covers diplomatic affairs for us, explains to me, they are a bit like the CATSA sanctions, which made it so challenging for India to buy S-400s, which means if you buy something from the Russians, can you have a transaction with one of their banks? That's a secondary sanction. To understand this better, I'm also sharing the link of her story on this with you, because Government of India has now set up a very high-level multi-ministry committee to understand and to study the impact of these secondary sanctions. So his intention also seems to be to come here and understand how India intends to deal with these sanctions or carry on dealing with Russia in spite of the sanctions. On the same day came the German National Security Advisor, who's designated Foreign and Security Policy Advisor, Jens Plotner. So he came in, and he came in for just a few hours. It's like literally less than 12 hours. And what is the message he conveyed? While he was here, he also said that in Germany, we intend to stop all our coal and gas buying from Russians by the end of this year. So Germans have a bit of a bad conscience problem there, because, you know, one argument that countries like India give to the US and the Western world over sanctions on Russia over sanctions, so you can't buy oil and gas, is to say that, look, European countries are buying this. Look at the Germans. They are buying so much of these. Look at the laziest European country, laziest, large, rich, super rich European country, which actually thought it had the luxury of shutting down its own nuclear power plants to please the Greens there, because they thought they'll keep on endlessly getting cheap gas, cheap energy from Russia. And now, just because they cannot give up that addiction, they continue buying. Whereas countries like ours, which are much poorer, we are being asked to stop buying from Russia. That's not going to happen. So his message was that, look, I know that we are stuck right now, but by next year, we'll not be buying from Russia. So I suspect the answer from the Indian side would be, we'll talk next year. Maybe by next year, we will also not need to buy from Russia. In any case, until this crisis came and sanctions came, India was buying just about 2% of its oil needs from Russia. So India was not dependent there. And argument again will be that because you are imposing these sanctions, you've already sanctioned Venezuela and Iran, global oil prices are up, up, up. Why should we suffer because of that? Venezuela has caused us no harm that you have sanctioned them. Iran has caused us no harm that you've sanctioned them. And Russia, all right, Russia is now destroying or trampling over a sovereign nation. So there is a principled issue. But you are not focusing your sanctions only on Russia. You've sanctioned three of the four biggest oil producers in the world. We refuse to accept that. So the German Foreign Security Policy Advisor, or the equivalent of the NSA, brought this message and he's gone back. And then comes UK Foreign Secretary Liz Truss. She comes on March 31, Thursday. Since I'm recording this on Wednesday, I'd say tomorrow. You might see it tomorrow. She comes in. And also the American Deputy NSA, Dilip Singh. Now, that's an interesting name. Dilip Singh, by the way, is American born, and he is the great grand nephew of the first South Asian elected to the US Congress. That was a Sikh leader, Sikh politician called Dilip Singh Sond. So he is his grand nephew. Whether he's been named after him or not, I don't know. But he comes in the National Security Council in America. He has a specific portfolio, and his portfolio is economic affairs. So he's the architect, or he's the author of the sanctions against Russia. He also has to see how those sanctions work. He will also be drafting and designing follow-on sanctions and secondary sanctions. He's gone to the best universities for education, Duke, MIT, Harvard, can't get better than that, and knows his economic stuff. So he's coming into India partly to persuade, partly maybe to tell the Indian side that, look, this is going to get tougher, and also to understand where India is coming from. Now, as Liz Truss and Dilip Singh leave India, comes in on April 1, All Fools Day, no less, Sergei Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister. And you can pretty much figure out what he's coming with. One, I think he'll be a little bit grateful that India has taken the course that it has, although he knows that India doesn't have much choice. He might have some message to India also, because China and Russia are now working closely together. So he might have some message there also, because he's coming in from China. He's going to China first and is then coming into India. And next, he wants to expand business in India. He wants India to buy more oil and gas. He wants India to buy more things, and there are some issues there. As I understand from Narima, the main issue is, how does India pay for what India buys from Russia? Now, you can do barter trade, but how much barter trade? Because Russia enjoys a big trade surplus with India, big in the Indian-Russian terms, not big in terms of, say, the India-China terms. Also, if India buys more oil and gas, much more oil and gas than it's been doing right now, which is what the Russians want, so this balance of trade then in favor of Russia will go higher. How does India then pay for that money? Now, paying in dollar, foreign currency now is problematic because of the sanctions. So Russia has been telling the Europeans, you want to buy our oil and gas, you pay in ruble. Now, India has made it clear to the Russian side, as I'm given to believe by Nainima, my colleague, that India cannot be paying for anything in ruble. India would prefer a rupee-rupee trade. So apparently, the Russians have a lot of stock of rupee left with them, which they've inherited from Soviet times, from the days of rupee-ruble trade. So Indian side is asking them to use that rupee to buy from India. And India also then pays in rupee for the oil and gas that India buys from there, and then do the business on both sides in rupee, not in ruble. So these are things that are delicate, they are important, because Russia right now, its economy is in a mess, its currency is in a mess, its markets are in a mess. The only source of income for Russia is its natural commodities, its mineral resources. And for that, it has to find markets. And ideally, it wants to be paid in hard currency for that. But even if hard currency is not possible, then to find terms of trade as suitable as possible in this tough period. Now, within all this, while all this is happening, somebody is coming to understand about how to circumvent sanctions, the Mexican guy. Somebody is coming to you with a little moral lecture. That probably might be the reason why Schallenberg, the Austrian foreign minister, came, because Austria, as we have explained to you before, is a neutral country, to say that, look, we are a neutral country. We are telling you, you are seeing a small country now destroyed, being destroyed by a much larger country. Speak for fairness, speak for natural justice. And you do you want to see something like this happening in your own neighborhood tomorrow? Who will speak for you, etc.? Then there are others who are telling you about sanctions, like the American guy. There is a Chinese foreign minister who wants to preserve his multilateral summit, that is the BRICS summit. Lavrov, who wants to expand business in India. In the middle of all this, you might have seen Mr. Modi also speaking at the BIMSTEC summit. Now, BIMSTEC is about India's neighborhood. So what is BIMSTEC? BIMSTEC is Bay of Bengal Initiative for Multisectoral Technical and Economic Cooperation. It's a bit complex, but basically, BIMSTEC came up, it's a good idea, it came up because SAARC wasn't functioning, South Asian Association of Regional Cooperation, because SAARC was held to ransom by the India-Pakistan relationship. Because for Pakistan, everything comes down to the Kashmir issue. So SAARC, in fact, was carrying a minefield in its own belly, which is the India-Pakistan equation over the Kashmir issue. That's why India decided to look east, and BIMSTEC came into being. BIMSTEC has five South Asian nations, that is Bangladesh, Bhutan, India, Nepal, Sri Lanka, five, then Myanmar and Thailand. Although left to me, I would add Myanmar also to the same grouping, which is South Asia minus Pakistan at this point. So they are meeting, and at the same time, our foreign minister, you may have seen, has traveled to Maldives. He's traveled from there to Colombo. Colombo, he attended the BIMSTEC foreign ministers meeting and is having a lot of bilateral meetings, because once again, it's the Chinese. Just as Europe has to worry about Russia, India has to worry about China. The Chinese now have a growing footprint all around India. It's like an encirclement. It's a diplomatic and economic encirclement, even more than a military encirclement. That's why India is now reaching out to Maldives to make sure that this anti-India movement that started there by the former president, who's now out of power, Yameen, that is countered. India is also reaching out to Sri Lanka to say, look, these are your times of trouble, right? We are always there, and we don't want anything by way of collateral, ransom, etc., etc. We are not like the Chinese, who, if you fail to pay their loan back, will come and take the port city of Hambantota. So that is where India is now moving. And while we talk about all this, the usual stuff is going on in Pakistan. It looks like at this point, it's all over bar the counting, but you never know until the last ball is bowled, as Imran Khan would say. So let's watch that situation. But I thought, so much is happening in India by way of foreign policy moves, with all this flurry of visits, and so much is happening around India, that maybe we are better off focusing on this right now, because the outcome of these processes will be very vital for all of us going ahead.